As the G7 nations slam new tariffs on steel and aluminum called for by President Trump, how will those tariffs affect our Florida economy? A closer look coming up. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we're always live on the radio at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, a look at the possible political fallout here in Florida and around the country as business feels the impact of the Trump tariffs. Also, the president just tweeted a moment ago that he has the absolute right to pardon himself when it comes to the investigation into potential collusion with Russia in the 2016 elections. There's so much to talk about. Get on the line now and share your thoughts at 549-2937. Then later, Olympic champion and women's rights activist Nancy Hogshead Makar. We've got a preview of her appearance later this week in St. Augustine, talking about the Me Too movement and more. Plus, Cole Pepper says the FSU softball team is right on the cusp of a national championship. He'll be along later in the hour. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, from the G7 to leading economists to our closest allies. President Trump's decision to slap stiff tariffs on steel and aluminum imports is a decision being met around the world with anger and frustration. The tariffs are seen to potentially have a negative impact on both the U.S. dollar and also increase the national debt. Republicans in the U.S. Senate are urging Trump to reconsider the tariffs, anticipating the issue could affect control of Congress this fall. Here in Florida, the tariffs could affect everything from business at our own Jacksport to a local Anheuser-Busch plant, which needs that steel for your cans of beer. Now, as all of this hue and cry is happening around the tariffs, just a few moments ago, President Trump tweeted that he has the absolute right to pardon himself, causing increasing alarm about the rule of law in this country. Matt Corrigan is following all of this. He's with UNF's Political Science Department, and he joins us now in studio with his thoughts on the tariffs, the Russian investigation, the president's tweet, and more. Matt Corrigan, always good to have you on the show. Good morning.
Hi, Melissa. Absolutely nothing to talk about.
I know, right? And we want your calls because there actually is so much to talk about here on the show right now. What are your thoughts about President Trump's tariffs on steel and aluminum and the reaction of our allies in Canada, Europe, and Mexico? What are your thoughts about President Trump saying he has the right to pardon himself if, in fact, he faces perhaps impeachment or other legal ramifications? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And we want your comments as well on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. All right, lots to get into, Matt, but let's begin with the tariffs. President Trump, as he campaigned on, he followed through with a campaign promise to implement stiff tariffs on steel and aluminum imports. That's been met with anger by our closest allies, Canada, Mexico, and the European Union. Let's begin with their reaction and their corresponding moves in response.
Yeah, I think what got everyone up in arms was not necessarily the tariffs on steel and aluminum, maybe coming from China. But when he turned on our allies, that really raised alarm bells. First of all, he was really not supposed to be able to do this. If you read the Constitution, Congress is in charge of trade and regulating commerce. President Trump has used a national security exception to put these tariffs on our allies. That's tough, really, I think, to make that argument. And if it gets challenged, I wonder if the courts will go along with that. I mean, Canada is a national security threat to the United States. I'm not really concerned about Mounties coming down to Duval County and attacking right. us yeah. or something. So
it reminds me of that old Robin Williams right. skit on the Oscars, Blame Canada. Right. Do you remember that?
And so I think that's where I think. A lot of this concern has come from. Even the U.S. Steelworkers Union has come out against these potential tariffs against Canada because we send a lot of steel to Canada. And they're worried about a reaction. So What he's doing is definitely, you know, probably out of the art of the deal. You take the most extreme position. But at some point, one of these gambits may not pay off. And that's what the concern is.
Right. What works in business is not necessarily applicable to international relations in this complex global economy. And as you pointed out, Congress ultimately has the power here. Retiring Republican Senator Bob Corker, other Republicans in Congress say they're urging the president to reconsider these tariffs. They're worried about the political fallout. Let's talk about that. For example, here in Florida, how will these tariffs affect business at Jaxport? Senator Bill Nelson was campaigning in the area the other day and pointed out this could affect our own Anheuser-Busch brewing plant in Jacksonville. The Beer Institute estimates the tariffs' economic impacts on their industry could result in the loss of more than 20,000 jobs.
Right. And obviously, we have a plant here. We also have a port here that deals a lot in automobiles that depend upon aluminum and steel. And so, you know, all the ramifications of this could be very widespread. Now, you know, Trump does have some cards here. First of all, our economy is doing very well, so we may be able to absorb some of these costs right now. Some people are going to get hit, but others may not. And it does have an attraction in Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, Pennsylvania for some of these workers. And
sure.
And again, those states are critical when you talk about reelection. And so, I think it is important to remember that every time President Trump makes a move like this, a lot of the so-called experts criticize him. But it does have a mass appeal that really goes beyond, you know, a textbook of economics. It's a blame somebody else. And that's a very powerful political argument. We've been in some ways an isolationist country for, you know, really since our beginning. And we've gone through waves of this. And really after World War II, we made a decision as a country that we're going to have to engage in the world and have trade rules and so forth. And right now, I think the bigger threat to everything is not these particular tariffs, but does it lead to other things? For example, there has been talk that he'll put tariffs on automobile imports. Okay.
He's saying he doesn't want to see German luxury cars on our roads anymore.
Now, if you're going to start taxing, and that's what a tariff is, a tax. If you're going to start taxing automobile imports, our friends at Jaxport aren't going to be too excited about that. And also, there's talk of mandating that energy grids, including JEA, would have to use coal and nuclear power or use more of coal and nuclear power. You talk about getting into the market. That is a huge assumption of presidential authority. And the only, I think two examples in our recent past, you know, Truman with the steel mills and maybe Nixon with wage and price controls would be similar. So my question is this just a negotiating gambit, these tariffs, or is this a road to assumption of more presidential power in the marketplace? And if it is, then I think we've got some real problems.
And we'll go to your calls in a moment. We're actually rebooting our phone system right now. Bear with us. The number to join the show is 549-2937. Now, Matt, as we talk about the controversy over the tariffs, just as we were preparing to go on the air, President Trump sent out a series of tweets. When it came to the tariffs, he wrote, "China already charges a tax of 16% on soybeans. Canada has all sorts of trade barriers on our agricultural products. Not acceptable. The U.S. has made such bad trade deals over so many years that we can only win." At the same time, the president tweeted that he has the absolute right to pardon himself. But he goes on to say, "But why would I do that when I have done nothing wrong?" And then yet another tweet coming out just a few minutes ago. "The appointment of the special counsel," he tweets, "is totally unconstitutional." And so this has set the political world on fire because the president, in effect, via Twitter, is now saying he is above the law.
Well, you also had Rudy Giuliani over the weekend saying the president, and I know he was using it as an example, not as a reality, but could shoot James Comey and not be indicted for that. So, again, when you go back and look at the Constitution and also the circumstances surrounding the founding of the country, our founders were not voting for a strong executive. And remember, the president is Article 2, not Article 1. And the idea...
It was all about the separation of powers.
Right. And so now Washington, with his standing in the nation, probably could have been king. And he put limits on himself. And so this idea that the president can pardon himself, while explicitly that's not stated in the Constitution, that he cannot pardon himself, the idea that the founders would go along with that, I think, is just ridiculous.
Legally speaking, is there any sound legal argument for a president being able to pardon himself? Rudy Giuliani aside.
Right. I'm not a constitutional lawyer, but I guess the argument would be that the pardon power is in the Constitution and there isn't an explicit statement saying the president can't pardon himself. So I guess that's the argument. But I just don't think the judges in our system are going to go for that. So if that gets challenged, and politically, I would think even Republicans who are his staunch supporters would say, no, we can't do that. I mean,
let's go to
can't go there.
We're talking tariffs and more on the show with UNF's Matt Corrigan right now. What do you think of President Trump's tariffs against steel and aluminum via our closest allies? Do you agree or disagree with this latest tweet from the president saying he believes he should be able to pardon himself as the Russia investigation moves forward? 549-2937. Joe is in Arlington right now. Hey, Joe, good morning.
Good morning. Just a general comment on Trump and his perspectives on tariffs, on being able to pardon himself and so forth. I know the man is the most brilliant intellect who has ever lived, or he's a sociopathic moron. It's one or the other.
One or the other. Okay. Thanks for that, Joe. Certainly the president's critics say the latter. His supporters think he's playing 38-dimensional chess.
Well, I'm not sure about 38-dimensional chess. Clearly, he believes in brinkmanship. And, you know, I think that's fine in a real estate deal in New York, but I think you've got to be careful with international relations. Now, it may pay off in Korea. I've been a critic of the president, but I give him credit for getting the Koreans to the table. But in every circumstances, to go to brinkmanship doesn't mean it's always going to pay off. And really, as president, what you want to do is minimize risk, because the chances of something going badly are very severe.
What would you say to those who've criticized President Trump's mindset in the sense that in business, he played a zero-sum game, thinking any deal that was good for his negotiating partner could not possibly be good for him? So everything was zero-sum in that world. In order for me to win, the other guy has to lose. And that betrays a fundamental lack of understanding of our complex geopolitical world with global economies closely intertwined. A deal that's good for the U.S. can be good for our trading partners. And critics of the president say he doesn't seem to understand that.
Yeah, and I think that's the whole assumption about our trading agreements with other countries, that, listen, access to markets are really important, and that if we're going to have this, you've got to have some rules. And that's why we have the World Trade Organization. And you have all sorts of problems with the World Trade Organization. That's fair, but at least there's a process that you can go through. And what Trump is doing with these tariffs citing national security is going outside that process. So the question is, why would any other country believe in any, you know, deal or any agreement that we make if we just, you know, ignore those rules?
The World Trade Organization has responded. They're challenging these tariffs. Canada, Mexico, and the EU have responded with their own tariffs on our goods.
Right.
So,
and that's the concern. Now, I think I think the Canadian tariffs or response tariffs, if you will, don't take place to July 1st. So they're trying to give a little room for negotiation. We'll see if that happens. But Canada is a huge trading partner, and a lot of U.S. businesses do business with Canada, and that would be really problematic.
Now, do you think that Republicans in Washington can work in the Senate with Democrats and, as they're saying, they want to do, talk Trump down from this plan? In particular, do you see this affecting the political calculus in the upcoming November midterms, as some are worried about?
The Pew organization's out with a recent survey that shows President Trump gaining about 87% approval among Republicans. And so he's really solidified his support among the Republican Party. And again, the things like these tariffs, calling out other countries, that has a great political appeal. I just don't think it's smart policy over the long run. And so the short answer to your question is no, I don't think the Republican Congress is going to do much.
Right. That's really not, that's a non-starter, in other words.
I think there's going to be some voices in Congress, but not much. Now you can watch this block in the House of moderate GOP congressional representatives who are trying to do something on immigration, that, you know, maybe that moderate block can develop into a policymaking group like the Freedom Caucus.
Now, as we watch the situation with the tariffs play out, what are your thoughts about the next steps for Special Counsel Mueller and this sort of game of chicken that the White House is playing with that team of investigators?
Yeah, what was interesting over the weekend is this letter came out really kind of outlining the argument for the Trump team, and this letter was written in January. So I think they have been anticipating a request for an interview of the president. And so to me, that's the end game. Is Special Counsel Mueller going to subpoena the president? Is the president going to interview? At the end of the day, what is going to happen with that? And I do think Mueller is on a short string here. I don't think you can be doing this in October, in the middle of the midterm elections. I think by the end of the summer, we've got to have some idea of where we're going.
Yeah. If this drags on into the fall, then won't Bob Mueller be accused of trying to affect the outcome of the midterm elections?
And that may be the Trump strategy. Obviously, the Trump folks say they want to get this over with. Well, the way to get this over with is to agree to an interview. And so I think they may just want to drag this out, and they may want to have a subpoena fight, because that's going to take months and months, and that may get them past the midterms.
And we had to reboot our phone system, folks. If you want to give us a call back, the number is 549-2937. As you pointed out, Matt, the divide in this country is so stark. President Trump has an above 80% approval rating among Republicans. Mm-hmm. Among Democrats and independents, it's below 40%. It's just incredible to see the partisanship through which people view all of these issues.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think we've had that in our country. What's surprising about the Trump presidency is it's so different. And really, I mean, when you start talking about, well, we're going to mandate that electrical grid operators use a certain type of energy, you know, that's a big assumption of presidential power, and something that the Republican Party would never have agreed to under a Democratic president. And so to see the changes in the Republican Party and really rallying around the Trump presidency is a fundamental shift.
What were your thoughts about the former Speaker of the House, John Boehner, the other day saying it's not the Republican Party anymore? The Republican Party is taking a nap.
Yeah. If other presidents and President Bush got pushback from his own party on certain endeavors he wanted to do, President Obama has gotten some pushback because generally the idea is people in Congress see themselves as important players in our Constitution. And so they've pushed back a lot. There hasn't been much pushback in the Republican Congress to Trump. And it's really it's important because we do have separation of powers. And even though they're of the same party, they've got to monitor what the president's doing.
All right, let's go to Nick on the West Side. Nick, good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys doing today?
Great, thanks.
Morning. Hey, I think it's great that he's doing this tariff thing here because we haven't negotiated these trade deals in I don't know how long. And it may hurt in the short run, but it's going to benefit us in the long run.
Okay, Nick. Matt.
Yeah, and I'm not an economist, so I'll tread carefully. You know, I think, again, you have to be careful. Clearly, in the case of steel, China has been, you know, producing mass amounts of steel really to kind of control the market. And so I think that's a really fair criticism. But at the end of the day, U.S. consumers like cheap prices.
And this could affect that.
Right. And what international agreements have brought us is cheap prices because some other countries can produce things cheaper than what we can do here in the United States. Now, if U.S. consumers and voters are going to accept higher prices, some of this, you know, may work out, but I'm doubtful of that. But right now, because the economy is going so well, we could probably absorb some of this.
Jeffrey Sachs, who runs Columbia University's Center for Sustainable Development, blasted the tariffs in a recent opinion piece. He called the president, I'm quoting here, mentally unstable and narcissistic, delusional, and said he's starting a psychopath's trade war. He will undermine the dollar, ratchet up the debt, and undermine our economic expansion through a spiral of protectionist measures. So tell us how you really feel, Jeffrey Sachs.
Yeah.
But this is a well-respected economic expert.
And that's the concern. If this is just a negotiating tactic, you know, and the tariffs, you know, get lifted and Canada doesn't impose tariffs, then okay. But is this the beginning of where other countries just say, we can't do business with the United States. We can't do business with this administration. So we really don't care. And that's where we start losing our influence and losing our influence over the marketplace. I'd also like to say that, you know, the idea that the United States hasn't had a huge impact on the economy of the world over the last, you know, 30 or 40 years, I think's, you know, fairly ridiculous. Clearly, there were some of these agreements that could have been done better, but the idea that the United States is a victim in the world economy seems a little bit of a stretch.
Chuck at the beaches. Go ahead, Chuck.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to talk just a minute about Trump's assertion that he could pardon himself. Just forget that it was Trump that said it. When you think about Abraham Lincoln and the, both of the Roosevelts and Truman, and Lincoln actually said, because he was putting people in jail all over the country, in sometimes an illegal way, he said, the Constitution, this was Lincoln, is not a suicide pact. And I think if you think about the things that both of the Roosevelts did and what Truman did with the atomic bombs, I'm guessing that every president that comes in there realizes that he could find himself in a situation like Lincoln or Roosevelt, and people would have liked to have probably prosecuted Lincoln. So I think probably every president may look at it from that perspective. On that, and then
okay.
As far as,
all right, yeah,
okay, thanks, guys.
You know, it's a good point to say that other presidents have assumed power, especially in emergency situations. You can think about, you know, the Japanese internment and other instances. I don't think Lincoln or Roosevelt would have been as either bold or as stupid to say they can pardon themselves, because politically, I think that's problematic. Is it a settled piece of law? It's not, because no one, I don't think.
No one's ever tried to do it.
No one would ever, I think, approach that. So, but at the end of the day, I would bet that the Supreme Court would say no.
Mike on the South Side. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey there. Thank you for taking my call. Great topic. Interesting things going on with all of this. You mentioned how the idea that we've been a victim of the world economy is a bit of a stretch, and I completely agree, but you have to appreciate that this is a narrative that he's been pushing, and that a particular political party has been pushing for several years now, that we're that we're victims of the world for terrorism or economic imbalances or what have you. So Trump's just cruising on what has been built up over several years and exactly what his base believes, and he's catering to that. Whether it's correct, accurate, or what have you, that's what his base believes, and that's what's keeping him popular with that base. There's still over 40% of America that is cheering for Trump and cheering him on. So unless we change that dynamic, this whole thing isn't really going to change, I don't think. Anyway, that's my statement. I'll listen to the comments on the air. Thanks, and have a great day.
Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, you know, Sherrod Brown, who's the senator from Ohio, Democratic senator, supporting Trump on these tariffs. So again, it has some appeal among, I think, white working class voters. And, you know, he may get away with it. He's got away with a lot. And again, to me, if it's just a negotiating ploy to get a better deal, that's fine. What we don't want to see happen is the international order that the United States has fought wars over and to protect collapses. We don't want that.
Always good to have your insights on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Melissa.
UNF's Matt Corrigan with us this morning. Much more still ahead. Later on the show, Culpepper will be by as the Seminoles go for a national championship. But up next, champion women founder and Olympic gold medalist Nancy Hogshead Maycar on her story and the Me Too movement. We'll be right back.
UF Health Proton Therapy Institute. Over a decade of proton therapy experience, research advances, and compassionate care for cancer patients. In Jacksonville and online at floridaproton.org.
Wayne Hogan of the Tara Hogan Personal Injury and Wrongful Death Law Firm. One text or call could hurt your company's bottom line if an employee causes an accident. Learn about Tara Hogan's distracted driving presentations for the workforce at waynehogan.law.
WJCT and Baptist Health are pleased to announce that Bobby Thomas, beauty and fashion expert and author of The Power of Style, Everything You Need to Know Before You Get Dressed, will be this year's keynote speaker at A Day for Her, Saturday, August 18th at the Hyatt Hotel. Bobby, the style editor for The Today Show, will share Bobby's buzz tips on everything from favorite beauty tricks to her favorite lifestyle finds. For more information or to purchase tickets, log on to wjct.org/events.
If a hurricane threatens our state, Florida's public radio stations have joined forces to ensure you receive important storm information. No matter where you are, you can stay informed on the radio, online, on social media, and on the mobile app Florida Storms. Timely weather information is always available from WJCT. The Florida Public Radio Emergency Network is supported by Citizens Property Insurance. Online at citizensfla.com.
Hi, I'm Andrew Wickman, host of Blues Horizon. The best in classic and modern blues is now on twice a week. Blues Horizon, Monday and Wednesday nights at 11, right here on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
Welcome back. Well, in recent days, more high-profile men across the country have been held accountable and hauled into court amid accusations of sexual misconduct. Everyone from former Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein to former New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman to former Missouri Governor Eric Greitens have been accused of sex crimes. It's the latest fallout from the sweeping Me Too movement that continues to change our culture and encourages more women to come forward. Some states are also actually changing their laws around the crimes of rape and sexual assault. This is all familiar ground for Jacksonville's own Nancy Hogshead Maycar. She's an Olympic gold medalist, an expert on Title IX, and the founder of the local advocacy group Champion Women. Nancy is actually headed off to Washington this week to continue her activism around this, and she will also be telling her story and talking about Me Too and women in sports at a special event down in St. Augustine. We'll tell you about that, too, as Nancy Hogshead Maycar joins us here in studio. Good morning.
Oh, Melissa, it's always good to be here with you.
It's always good to be with you. Now, this issue, which is sweeping the nation, has brought you back into renewed prominence. You've been instrumental in influencing Congress around legislation that particularly involves the abuse of gymnasts and Olympic athletes in sports, this notorious case involving a coach, Larry Nassar. But that's just one example of what you're working on, isn't it?
Sure. Well, I actually got involved in the movement of how do you protect club and Olympic sport athletes, that is, athletes that are not participating as part of a school program, back in 2010. And I thought that if the Olympic Committee just knew how bad it was, surely they would do something about it without having to get Congress involved. And I tried that effort for quite a long time and was unsuccessful. They didn't want to do it. They didn't want it to be their responsibility. And that was, they saved themselves a boatload of money by not taking responsibility for it, by saying like, oh, it's the police's job. Oh, it's the parents' job. Oh, it's the club's job. And so they knew about these pedophiles that were literally moving around the country and intentionally chose to send young kids off on international trips with these rapists. I mean, not just abusers who, you know, sort of play these mind games with young athletes and have them think that they're in love. No, rapists. And they're like, well, if they haven't been criminally charged, you know, no business says that. No school says that. But the Olympic Committee said that. Wow. So, yeah, so it was a lot. So we just, February 14th, 2018, we got a new statute passed called the Safe Sport Act. And that it actually gives the Olympic Committee a legal duty of care over athletes. They've got to protect them from physical, emotional, and sexual abuse.
And that's a huge step forward.
Huge.
Now, sports, of course, is your area. You're an Olympic gold medalist, a champion swimmer from right here in Jacksonville. Your advocacy group is called Champion Women. But when we talk about this movement and the change we're seeing in this country, of course, it goes beyond just the field of sports. Men from every walk of life are being held accountable for sexual misconduct. And this is something that you can really personally speak to. You're going to be telling your story, your own story, Nancy's story later this week.
I will. And I'm looking forward to being there with you
and
Kelly Youngs, who's organizing the event. It's called She is Fierce, and it's in St. Augustine. And I'm one of the first speakers for the year, but there's a whole speaker series
that's going to
be going on.
People might not realize that you were the victim of sexual assault when you were in college.
I was, yeah. And I almost feel like it's the responsibility of well, I consider myself now an older woman. I'm 56. I almost didn't get it right there. And to let the younger generation know about that they're not alone, right? So for us to have it be part of our story. So I'm going to be, you know, not just telling my story, but also I feel like the most important part of my story is the recovery part of the story. Right? There's the rape. I was out running. Duke has two campuses, East and West, and I got grabbed and thrown, and we fought in brush for a long, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, which is a long time to fight. And then, you know, was raped for, you know, 2.5 hours. I mean, it was an awful, degrading, humiliating, just as awful and as horrifying an event. I mean, I really thought I was going to die.
Yeah,
and I was lucky to get out of there alive.
Right,
but you know, like that's sort of the alpha and omega of that story. the more important story, I think, for all women that everybody can relate to is, well, how do you recover from something like that? Because that's not easy.
No, and until very recently, women didn't have, I don't think, the support they needed to recover from something that horrific. Although you did get the support you needed to some degree, didn't you?
I did. I got a lot more than what most women get. And I owe the generation of feminists before me for this debt of gratitude. You know, if I had been raped in India or lots of other countries, I may have had to marry this guy. Mm-hmm. I may have been so shamed publicly that my family would have had to disown me so that maybe my sister could get married.
That's right? The thing. Victims are often shamed. And so let me ask your thoughts about how that's changing, particularly when it comes to the prosecution of rapists in court. In the past, the defense tactic would be to shame the person who came forward and accuse the perpetrator.
Right.
Some states now are trying to change laws, particularly California and Maryland. They're passing measures that say accused predators who claim their victims consented to sex can be countered with testimony about prior attacks. That's sort of a game changer because rape is a crime of compulsion.
Right.
Perpetrators keep going over and over again until they're convicted.
Right. Yeah, the research shows that the average quote-unquote undetected rapist, mean they've never served a day in jail and never been brought to justice or anything, has already committed over seven rapes. So you have a small number of men who are committing a huge amount of harm out there. So, you know, what I think is interesting is that Michigan State University tried to shame the victims and saying, oh, you're just in it for the money. Oh, you're just trailer trash looking for a dollar. You're just, right? And it backfired on them. Mm-hmm. And that was really one of the first times that that strategy has backfired. There's always been a receptive audience for that argument that, oh, you just want the money. And when those gymnasts got up there and spoke, and I mean, they were so impressive and authentic and vulnerable and yet really powerful. And they brought it, and the whole student body campus, including the faculty, was really on the side of the victims. And so what that tells me is, you know, for the first time, you had a standard defense, oh, they're just in it for the money, that backfired. And I'm hoping that will continue, that when we see more and more prosecutions, that this idea that, I mean, when you go to civil court, like, that's really all a judge can give you is money, right? You can't get your trauma back. You can't get anything else. So people shouldn't feel bad about using legal remedies to be able to go forward.
Now, if you don't have your ticket yet, you need to get it now because tickets are going fast as we're excited to meet and be inspired by Olympic gold medalist and champion women founder Nancy Hogshead Maycar. It's She Is Fierce Wednesday night at the Historic Treasury in St. Augustine. Invite a friend to come with you. Get your tickets now at 904tix.com as Nancy shares her story and she kicks off a summer of cocktails, connections, inspiration at the Women's Wednesday Speaker Series for She Is Fierce. Nancy, it's so good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me, Melissa.
And still ahead, Culpepper as the FSU Seminoles go for a national championship. But in a moment, everything you need to know about this week's hurricane sales tax holiday. Yeah, that's happening now. We'll be right back.
Unlock your newest member benefit. Over 1,000 episodes of your favorite PBS shows. American Masters. Antiques Roadshow. Nature. Nova. Masterpiece. Watch the best of PBS anytime, anywhere. Become a member. Sign in and start streaming today.
WJCT.org/passport.
I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. From the State House to the Everglades to the Panhandle, Florida has a unique story.
So join us every Friday for the Florida Roundup.
And hear from newsmakers, journalists, and Floridians from all across the state.
About the issues that matter to you.
The Florida Roundup, Fridays at 1 on WJCT.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Welcome back. Well, hurricane season is upon us again. That's the bad news. But here's a silver lining to the coming season, which forecasters say should be slightly above average in the number and frequency of storms. Here's the good news. A sales tax holiday is happening this first week of June for many items you might need in the event of a hurricane. With more about that and a few tips for emergency planning this season, we welcome Mary Svoboda, Chief Operating Officer and Chief Lending Officer for Jack's Federal Credit Union. Hey, good morning.
Good morning to you.
All right. So let's talk first about this sales tax exemption going on this week. If people want to buy certain items, this is the week to do it, right?
Absolutely. It ends June 7th. So really, they need to go shopping.
Go shopping now for things like flashlights, radios, batteries, gas tanks, coolers, generators.
Generators.
That's the big one, isn't it?
You'd save a lot of money, right, with a tax-free.
You could save maybe about $30-$40.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That's not bad. Okay, so, and that's through June 7th. But in addition to that, Mary, at Jack's Federal, you're reminding people to take a moment and do a few other things to prepare. What are those?
In addition to getting all those needed supplies, they need to really think about their finances and making sure that they're prepared for, you know, what could happen. And Irma gave us a little taste, didn't it?
So it sure did.
I think we were becoming complacent, but I think maybe folks are going to be on it this year. So some things to think about is insurance. Call your insurance agent. Check on what coverage you actually have for your home. Mm-hmm. What coverage you have for your car. A lot of cars were flooded, if you remember, in the San Marco and Riverside area during Irma. And folks didn't always have replacement coverage on those autos.
Right.
So I think insurance coverage is very important. Take some photos of your home. You might have done some upgrades. You might have purchased some new furniture, things like that, that your insurance company might not be aware of. You want to make sure that you have it documented.
Okay. And plan a budget for storms, you say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You need probably to have, you know, anywhere between $500 to $1,000 cash on hand. And so if that's not something you have readily available, you know, you could consider getting like a personal line of credit at your credit union or a bank so that you have it accessible if you needed to leave the area, stay in a hotel for an extended period of time.
Right.
And sometimes those debit cards and credit cards aren't working when, you know, systems go down. We had no internet, if you remember, here during Irma for quite some time in Jacksonville.
That's right.
You know, so.
At the same time, you say if you do evacuate, having a big wad of cash may not be as critical as people might think. Is that right?
Well, I'm not sure of that,
okay.
You know, so I would still plan to have some cash on hand.
$500 minimum?
Yeah, because you don't know how far you'll be able to go. Sometimes the hotels in Georgia and even in the Panhandle were booked up. You know, you might have to go even further, and it's just good to have cash on hand. The old expression is during a disaster, cash is king.
That's right. Having a safe deposit box is also sometimes a good idea. Keeping vital documents outside your home, if you think that's prudent to do.
One of the ideas would be maybe to put some images of your vital documents on like a thumb drive and put that in your go bag so that if you have to leave your home suddenly, you have your birth certificates, your marriage certificate, and those types of things handy. And then you can also print out copies that you can keep with you. You never know what you're going to have to do, and you want to be ready.
Be ready as well, as Mary said, for the sales tax holiday. As hurricane season kicks off through June 7th, there will be no tax on hurricane season items like flashlights, batteries, generators, and more. Very timely advice from Mary Svoboda, Chief Operating Officer, Chief Lending Officer for Jack's Federal Credit Union. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And knock on formica, we will not have a bad hurricane season.
Oh, I sure hope not.
I do too. In a moment, Cole Pepper as the Seminoles go for a national championship. We'll be right back.
On the next Fresh Air, Keith Hernandez. He played on World Series teams with the Cardinals and Mets and made a memorable appearance on Seinfeld. His new memoir is about learning baseball. When he was a kid, his father made a contraption in his garage to practice hitting.
I was there taking probably 500 to 1,000 swings a day. I just absolutely loved it.
But success, he says, didn't come easy. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
The race against time and the rising seas in Miami.
It's almost like the risk is going to sink us before the seas ever do.
How a city plans for its future in the face of climate change. I'm Tanzina Vega, coming to you from WLRN in Miami. Next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
How do you spell trade war using only three letters? Z-T-E.
I think this has sparked a lot of techno-nationalism, but these industries still lag 1 to 2 generations or more behind.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, one company, two countries, and who makes what? Next time on Marketplace. Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
We're taught to pay close attention to the weather. Hurricane Maria got everyone's attention after it killed thousands of Americans in Puerto Rico last year. Hurricane season runs from June through November. Are Puerto Rico and the nation ready? Next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, the Seminoles will play for a national championship in softball.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
FSU softball for the win. Here with that and the rest of the weekend sports, Cole Pepper is here. Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. FSU onto the championship round after staving off elimination twice yesterday. They beat UCLA twice to earn a spot in the championship series for the first time in school history. No school has been to more Women's College World Series without winning a championship, and Florida State will have a chance to end that streak this year. They face Washington in the best of three series starting today. One interesting stat here, FSU is 7-0 in elimination games in the NCAA tournament this year. They have 7 times faced elimination in the double elimination format. Every single game they have won, so they have been very clutch this year. While Florida State's softball team is playing for a championship, the Florida Gator baseball team is 1 win away from advancing to the Super Regionals. The Gators face Florida Atlantic at 1 o'clock today in the Gainesville Regional. If Florida wins, they move on. If FAU wins, the Gators need to beat them one more time. Florida, you might remember, is the defending national champs and the top overall seed in the tournament, and they have not lost so far in the postseason, which includes a win over JU on Saturday night, a one-run game. JU lost that one and then was beaten yesterday by FAU. A best season ever, certainly one of the best seasons ever for JU baseball. Head coach Chris Hayes in just his second season has him heading in the right direction, but they couldn't get out of the regionals against the Gators this weekend.
Oh, wow. Good luck, Florida. Good luck, Florida State. And the Armada, Cole says, finally played a home match in their league.
You know, yeah. So they've had some home matches in the U.S. Open Cup, but playing in this new league, the NPSL, the National Premier Soccer League, because of some scheduling changes, they haven't had a home match. Season started in late April. Here we are in June, and they finally get a home match at Hodges Stadium on the campus at UNF. Had to wait a little extra as well. A 45-minute rain delay and lightning delay delayed the start of things. They finally got a chance to go and beat the Storm FC 1-0. Jacksonville is unbeaten in league play, and they'll host their former NASL rivals Miami FC Wednesday night at Hodges Stadium. Just a little side note on this one, Melissa. Storm FC had come in having surrendered 20 goals and not scored a single goal in their last three matches. So the Armada, not all that pleased with a 1-0. They have some higher expectations and higher aspirations. They want to dominate this league in their year in this league. And then depending on what happens next, we'll see about the direction that the club will take in terms of a new league. But getting the win, great. They want to score goals in buckets against the teams they're facing, and some of whom, frankly, don't have the same kind of roster that the Armada have, which is one of the better rosters in the league.
All right, last but not least, the Jaguars start one of their busiest weeks in the offseason, actually today.
Yep, they'll be on the field in a matter of about an hour as part of the OTAs, the Organized Team Activities. 4 days this week they'll be on the field with the offseason practice. These are voluntary sessions. Everybody except Jalen Ramsey has attended at least most of them. Sessions are not open to the public, but we'll be over there today. One of the things that I've noted this year is that for the first time in a preseason in probably a decade, Jaguars players are really taking ownership of what's happening here. Part of that comes from having success last year, but also it's the makeup of the team. Telvin Smith was talking about filling in the gap of leadership with Paul Posluszny's retirement in the linebacker room and on the defense. And he said something that was a pretty profound statement. He said he wants to continue to remind everybody on the team not to tire of success. And that seems that, you know, who would ever get tired of success? Well, nobody gets tired of the fruits of success. What he's talking about is tiring of the preparation to be successful. And when you get the ownership within the team like that, when the players are taking ownership of what's happening on the field, that usually results in very good things happening on the field. So we'll see how it all plays out. It's way early, by the way, to start making predictions right, based on what we're seeing. But I will tell you that this team does appear to be, they look and act like a team that knows that they're good and expects to be good again this year.
And sure, after last season, why not?
Yeah, now there's no guarantee from one year to the next in the National Football League that you're definitely going to, you know, continue that. But when you consider the pieces the Jaguars have in place, strong running game, they improved the offensive line, they brought in some other offensive skill position players, Blake Bortles in the second year working in the same system, first time in his career he's had the same offensive system and offensive coaches in back-to-back years, I think we can expect good things. Now, the schedule looks tougher right now. That could, of course, change based on how teams come out of the gate in the season. But this does look like a team that should contend once again here in 2018.
And a quick note as well, when it comes to your involvement at our news partner, News for Jax, your sports team is now you, Cole Pepper, and former Jaguar Mark Brunell.
Yep.
So that's exciting to see as well.
Yep. Mark and I, of course, did a show last year on Monday nights. We'll do that again this year. It'll be expanded to a one-hour show. But Mark's also going to play a bigger role in our sports coverage. Great to have the best quarterback in the history of the Jaguars being part of our sports team. And a guy who obviously is very plugged into the community is the football coach at Episcopal.
And we love having you every Monday. It's going to be a busy season, so we're glad you're going to be with us again through the fall and winter. Thanks for being with us every week.
Thanks, Melissa.
And follow Cole on Twitter. Get all your sports news at Cole Pepper there. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Shevchik. Next on 1A, hurricane season has begun. Is Puerto Rico ready for another bad storm? That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. If you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight at 8, just keep listening for the Electro Lounge. And have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.